All right, so we finished our study of the reign of Abijam, the king of Judah, who was the son of Rehoboam. We finished that last week. Just refreshing for a moment, as we studied through the life and reign of Saul as king of Israel, and then David, and then Solomon. Of course, between Saul and David, the kingdom transitioned from the house of Saul, who was of the tribe of Benjamin, to the tribe of Judah and the house of David. And that throne was established by the Lord from David and is now still being preserved, even though after Solomon's death, Solomon being David's son who reigned after him, was the last of the kings over all the tribes of Israel. After Solomon's death, the kingdom of Israel was divided. And so there were two kings in the land. There was one that reigned over 10 tribes out of the 12. And then the other reigned over the tribe of Judah along with Benjamin. So even though 10 to 2 sounds like the northern kingdom would have been much greater in size and territory and number and all of that, that wasn't actually the case because Judah was so large and populous and dominant that really you had two pretty close to equally divided kingdoms, although there were many more tribes that were under the king in the north. And because the 10 of the tribes were under the northern kingdom, it frequently and most frequently goes by the designation of Israel. Obviously, Judah and Benjamin are also tribes of Israel. But we see reference to the southern kingdom typically as the kingdom of Judah after the split. So you have two kingdoms. And who were the kings that reigned over the two different, the divided kingdoms? Well, it was Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was of the tribe of Ephraim. He was put upon the throne of Israel, the northern kingdom. That was by God's designation. And why was there a split? It was punishment by God for Solomon's idolatry. Solomon in his later years turned to idols. Because of the wives that he had married. He married princesses that were from these other nations that worshipped idols, and then he was converted to idol worship by them. Now, he did repent before it was too late for him, as we have recorded in the book of Ecclesiastes. Nevertheless, the Lord invoked that punishment upon the nation because of the idolatry that was started by Solomon, but it was carried forth and many in Israel turned to idols. So that was his punishment of the nation for all of that by dividing the kingdom. But he did preserve David's throne under Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. So Jeroboam became king in the north, and then you have Rehoboam in the south. Well, Jeroboam is still, at this point in our study, he's still the king in the of the northern kingdom. But after Rehoboam, his son Abijam reigned for 3 years, and that's where we finished last time. And so now Abijam's son Asa is going to become the next king of Judah. But to review further, what's going on in the nation at this time? Well, we know that under David, Israel had reached a high point spiritually. That was unmatched in its history. The only time in which we can see anything to rival that as far as the good of the nation and following the Lord and keeping His commandments was during that time under Joshua and the elders of Israel when they entered the land of Canaan. Joshua and Caleb and those at that time, the Lord fulfilled all of His promises and gave them the full extent of the land that He had promised to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There were other times under the judges, of course, in which the Israelites had turned to the Lord and would follow Him for that generation under that judge. But we don't have any statements that are so explicit about the obedience of the entire nation to the degree that we see under Joshua at that time until you get to David's time. We went through all that in our study of that. And then that persisted into Solomon's reign until he was carried into idolatry. And then because of him being the king of the nation, when he turned to idols, so many also followed suit. So then we see this decline spiritually in Israel at that time. Well, that's why the Lord made the punishment and divided the kingdom. Well, then what happened in the north? Well, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, came in, and he was promised by God to have his throne secure. God was going to preserve it and strengthen it, like he had done with David's throne in Israel, if Jeroboam would follow the Lord like David did. But he didn't. In his own mind, because Rehoboam, Solomon's son, was a rival king, he did not feel secure on his throne and felt like the people of Israel would follow the house of David in total, and that they would remove Jeroboam, and then Jeroboam would end up being killed. And so he felt that way because all the tribes of Israel were still going down to Jerusalem by God's commandment. That was the capital. That was in Judah, obviously, and that was the cap. That was the city of David. So that's where Rehoboam reigned. Well, God's commandment was, that's where the temple was that Solomon built, and so God's commandment was that all Israel had to present themselves before the Lord during the three feast days of the year, that being the feast of the Passover, and then the Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost, as it was also known, and then later the Feast of Tabernacles later in the year. But during those feast days, they had to come. Everyone had to come to Jerusalem. Well, here was Jeroboam seeing all of his subjects of those 10 tribes going down three times a year for that, what was a national event, right where Rehoboam was. Well, even though that was the case, that still was no threat to Jeroboam, because the Lord promised him it wouldn't be. Just like for David, did David consider it a threat to have Saul's, his heir, his firstborn son was Jonathan, David's best friend, and made a covenant with Jonathan to look after his descendants. And so his son, Mephibosheth, was taken in by David and to eat at David's table as one of his own sons. I mean, did David consider that to be a threat to have the one who would have been the heir to the throne of the previous ruler of Israel to be right there at his table? No, because he trusted the Lord, believed his promise. So he was keeping the covenant that he had made to Jonathan and being faithful to that. He wasn't worried about his throne. He knew that was God's work, and God would take care of him like he promised. Well, Jeroboam didn't have that faith, and therefore, he in his own mind decided to solve the problem that he didn't even have. He didn't have a problem of an insecure throne, but he imagined that he did. And so then he came up with a plan to secure his own throne, which of course led to the destruction of his family and that throne of his household. Namely, he created an entire religion, made two golden calves, forbade his subjects from going to Jerusalem anymore, told them that those golden calves were their gods that brought them out of Egypt, and made up his own priests, his own feast days, his own altars, everything, and made up a brand new religion for the entire nation. And this nation, these tribes who had turned to idols anyway, as far as the majority of the people, did it really cause them a problem to transition from worshiping whatever idols they had already turned to now following King Jeroboam's new religion? Well, obviously not, because the vast majority of them did. Now, there was a minority that were faithful to the Lord of all those tribes in the north. What did they do? They left. And they went down to Judah, and they joined themselves to Rehoboam, Solomon's son, and strengthened him. And Rehoboam, Solomon's son, followed the Lord for how long? 3 years. And then he turned away from the Lord. Now let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 14 to refresh ourselves on that, because We're now looking in back at Rehoboam's reign and the things that happened after those 3 years when Rehoboam turned away from the Lord. Let's read back in 1 Kings chapter 14, verses 21 through 24, that gives us this summary of what happened in Judah when Rehoboam, Solomon's son, turned away from God. Let's see, Brother Aaron, could you read that? 1 Kings 14, 21 to 24.
Rehoboam, son of Solomon, reigned in Judah. Rehoboam was 41 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 17 years in Jerusalem. The city which the Lord gave to him out of all the tribes of Israel, put his name in it. His mother's name was Naaman, and the Ammonites. And Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy. Which they had committed above all at the father's home. He also built the high places in the kitchen and groves, and every high hill, and under every green tree. He was also silent in the land, and they did according to all the abominations of the nations which the Lord cast out.
So, what's the state of things spiritually in Israel at this time? Well, under Jeroboam, he made an entire religion and forbade the people from obeying the Lord. And so, there you have 10 of the tribes now that have departed from the Lord with a wicked king over them. And then you have the other two tribes under Rehoboam. For 3 years they followed the Lord, but now look. And so when this happens in Judah, and he's talking about Judah there, verse 22, Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord and provoked him to jealousy. So then they did worse than what their fathers had done. They made high places, images, and groves on every high hill and under every green tree. So they turned to idols. Now, as we saw under Abijam, there were still some faithful ones there, probably including the ones that had left Israel just shortly before this, because they were determined to serve the Lord, and that was the only place they could. But as far as the majority of the nation, what's going on spiritually now when you have Judah turning away and you already have what's going on in the north under Jeroboam? This is a very low period of time in throughout the nation. So they turn to the idols and this immorality, and he mentions the Sodomites in the land that did according to the abominations of those the nations around them. Well, they took their idolatrous customs. Now, this particular word, sodomite, refers to males who were serving really in a role like a prostitute, but in many cases it was associated with the idol worshiping. And this kind of thing went on during that period of history with these nations around Israel with their idolatrous customs. There was a lot of wickedness and immorality as far as men and women that were going on as part of their idol worship. Well, those customs got brought into Israel, learned them from their neighbors. What did God warn them about? Going back to the time of Joshua, when the tribes didn't put out all of the remnant of those nations that those Canaanite people that were in the land, when they didn't drive all of them out. What did God warn them about that would happen? And what did He tell them would happen if they continued to have those neighbors with those wicked customs around them? They would be snares to them. They would learn those customs from them. They would marry their children to those people. And then their children would learn those customs, and they would end up following after them. Well, that's what God warned them about. And what happened? Well, this isn't the first time. That's what happened throughout the period of the judges and those times between the judges. That whole pattern through the 450 years of the judges, Israel would follow the Lord during the lifetime of the judge, and then after he died, or she in the case of Deborah, when the judge died, then the nation turned away from the Lord. The children of the generation before would follow after wickedness, and they would follow after those nations around them, and then God would send one of those nations to against them to subjugate them. Their enemies would rise up against them, and then they would be oppressed by them. And then at a certain point, after a certain period of time of going through that punishment, then the Israelites would turn to the Lord and repent. Then God would raise up a new judge, and they would follow the Lord under that judge. And then he would die, and then that cycle would repeat. So this is not the first time. This is not the first period in Israel's history where this happened. This was just the latest example. Now, this is the first time it's happened like this under the kings. But because of what's going on in the north, the times in which Israel was going to follow the Lord as a nation, it's over. Those 10 tribes in the north are never going to turn back to the Lord. All the time from Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, to there were 18 kings after Jeroboam that ruled in the north, through Hoshea, the last one. And in 722 B.C., Hoshea's kingdom fell. The Assyrians besieged his capital, Samaria. And then, already at that time, the Assyrians had encroached upon the northern territories, and the tribes they that were up in the extreme north of Israel were taken into captivity. Well, then Samaria itself fell. And so in 722 B.C., that was the end of the northern kingdom, and Judah was left alone then. There was only one kingdom left. So those tribes in the north, they turned away from the Lord under Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and they never repented. And eventually, they were destroyed. They were taken into captivity, but their spiritual distinction from the idolatrous nations around them were already gone. So once they were carried off and spread among the other nations that the Assyrians had captured, well, they just assimilated as far as physical part. The spiritual distinction was already gone. So those tribes were lost to history, and they became known and are still even today referred to of that period of time as the lost tribes of Israel. But they were gone. So there's never going to be a time in Israel's history to match what was under David and Solomon ever again. I mean, Judah is going to be the only place where there's going to ever be righteousness again in Israel for the rest of the Old Testament period. And those times would be brief. I mean, look at what happens under Rehoboam. Now the southern kingdom has turned away from the Lord. Well, did they return? Did they repent? Look at what was going on there with the idolatry, the immorality, those customs of the nations around them. Now they had been adopted by the Israelites at this time. Did they repent of that under Abijah, the son of Rehoboam? No. They didn't repent of that under the rest of Rehoboam's time. In fact, the next thing it tells us in 1 Kings 14, God sent Shishak, the Pharaoh of Egypt, against Rehoboam in Judah as punishment, repeating that cycle, going back to what God had promised through Moses would happen to them as one of the curses when they did not obey him. Their enemies would rise against them, and God used that as he had told them he would. And so he did that again here under Rehoboam. Well, they didn't. Even though Rehoboam humbled himself and accepted the words of the prophet, he didn't repent and become a servant of the Lord. His son Abijam had some good words that we saw when we were looking at 2 Chronicles 13 when he was facing off against Jeroboam, and he pointed out the wickedness of Jeroboam. But did that mean Abijam himself was keeping the Lord's commandments? No, in fact, we're told he wasn't. That was in the first 8 verses of 1 Kings 15 that we saw about the reign of Abijah. So this low point in Judah has persisted through the 3 years of the reign of Abijah, and then Asa becomes king. Well, given what's been going on in Judah, considering that Rehoboam, and we just read there in 1 Kings 14, how his mother was an Ammonitess, she was of the children of Ammon, those descendants of Lot, that was an idol-worshipping nation. And Solomon married women of that nation, including Rehoboam's mother. Well, he followed those customs himself, turned to them, as we see. And then his son followed those customs. Well, now his grandson comes along. The distance between Asa, well, as time is going on, the distance between in time and generations from David and when they followed the Lord, and even Solomon, his son, is becoming greater. Asa becomes king. How optimistic would we be that Asa, and we'll read about how Asa's his mother, Rehoboam's, well, he had lots of wives, but the one that was Asa's mother, I mean, she worshipped idols too. Well, given this history and everything, what would we expect of Asa coming out of a situation where both of his parents worshipped idols? I mean, he never knew David. What chance would we give that Asa was going to be righteous? Probably not much, if any. But what happens? He is. He is one of these exceptions. He's going to do everything he can to turn the nation back to God. He's going to follow the Lord, and he's going to do everything he can to clean up all of this mess that started under his grandfather Rehoboam. I mean, really, it started under Solomon. Solomon was the one that allowed his wives to build those high places, and then he worshiped there himself, as we know. So things that started actually under Solomon that Rehoboam also followed and continued under Abijah. Now, Asa's going to try to, he's going to clean up, he's going to spiritually take over and try to make things right in his kingdom again. So we're going to have, and he reigns for a long time. As we could see, I mean, Abijah had a very brief reign, so when Asa comes along, he's going to end up having a very long reign. The early part of his reign will overlap with that wicked Jeroboam, the first king of the northern kingdom. But then he's going to overlap many of Jeroboam's successors. And things, as we mentioned, aren't going to get any better in the north. But Asa is going to turn his kingdom to the Lord, that they were going to follow the Lord in his days. And then he has a son, Jehoshaphat, who's also righteous. So we're going to, in fact, this will be the only time again where you're going to have two kings in a row, father and son, that are righteous. There are only going to be two other righteous kings in the rest of Judah's history. Now we'll have three of them that started out doing right, at least to some extent, but they're not going to continue in it. But as far as ones that the Lord identified, that they kept the Lord's commandments and walked in the ways of David, Asa, that we're about to study about, and his son Jehoshaphat, and then the only other two were Hezekiah and Josiah, many years later. And there was a gap between Hezekiah and Josiah. So we're about to look at really one of the brightest parks in Judah's, in the history of Judah under the kings, that we're going to see again. I mean, we could very, it could be a very good argument that this will be the best time that we're going to read about now for the rest of its history. Hezekiah is going to get cooperation from the people when he turns them back to the Lord. Sadly, Jehoshaphat, Asa's son, made a grave error in going along with the marriage of his son to the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. So Jehoshaphat's son was going to walk in the ways of the house of Ahab, and it's going to destroy his family. It's going, spiritually speaking, it's going to destroy morality and righteousness in his kingdom. For many generations, it's going to sink lower and lower and lower until it bottoms out under Ahaz. And Ahaz somehow has a righteous son, Hezekiah, who himself tried to clean all of that up. And the people followed him in that, but then they turned right back after him. When Josiah, the last righteous king of Judah, came in and tried to clean up again, and actually went further than anybody in that, he was really doing it alone. We're told the people, they faked it under Josiah. So their hearts were so far gone, he made them swear to follow the Lord in a covenant, but they didn't do it with their hearts. He didn't have the people with him. So really, this is going to be one of the best times, probably the best time that we're going to read about under the kings. So is there anything going to match what was under even the best times under the judges, even here? No, because even when we look at this with a righteous king like Asa and the things he's going to do to turn the nation back to God, it's his kingdom, but it's only Judah and Benjamin. What about the other 10 tribes? They're going to persist in all the wickedness under Jeroboam and the ones who succeeded him to the throne in the north. So you're not going to ever have all the tribes following the Lord again, as we mentioned. But we can see what started under Rehoboam in Judah and persisted through the rest of his days and through those 3 years of the reign of Abijam. So when Asa becomes king, and he's going to specifically mention these things that we just read about in 1 Kings 14, 21 through 24, those things that were occurring in the land of Israel, idolatry and the immorality. Immorality, fornication, homosexuality, those things now were running rampant in Judah as they did in the nations around Israel. Well, what did the Lord think of that? That's a pertinent question considering what's going on in our nation and in the world today. If someone like Asa comes along, of course he had the power as king, but until Asa became king, among those few who were still following the Lord during that time under the rest of Rehoboam's reign and throughout Abijam's reign, until Asa becomes king, if you were an average citizen in that kingdom, and you know what the Lord said about those things, what would your voice be heard? And if you spoke out about it, what would have been the result more than likely? Even among a kingdom that by its very existence was identified with Jehovah, but they weren't following him and they turned to all of this wickedness. Well, we read about those, the idolatry, the Sodomites that were in the land. Let's turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 23 and we want to read verse 17 there. What the Lord used the same word again in this commandment. Deuteronomy 23 and verse 17. Brother Trey. All right, so what, and we could look at a lot of other verses in Deuteronomy and in Leviticus in God's law about fornication in all of its forms. So whether it's adultery, whether it's unmarried people that are living or behaving as if they are married, or homosexuality, any of those things. Any kind of sexual immorality. We read Leviticus and Deuteronomy. We read the law of Moses. There's nothing unclear about what God thought about that. Even before, long before the law of Moses, well, the word that's used there continues to be used into our present time, even though great efforts are made not to allow that word to be used because it's considered to be it's considered to be a bad term. So you hate people if you use this term. But this term, sodomite, I mean, what's the first part of that word? Why is that word used? Because it goes along with the behavior that was rampant in Sodom and Gomorrah, going back to the time of Lot. That's in Genesis. Well, you first start reading about it in Genesis 13. Genesis chapter 13, but it's in Genesis chapter 19 when God rained fire and brimstone down from upon those cities and destroyed them for that behavior. So when do we have the first clear example of what God thinks of that kind of wickedness? that predates Moses by centuries. So long before the law of Moses was given, God was very clear. I mean, actually, where God is first clear on it is when he, in Genesis 2, after he created man, and then he took a rib from Adam and he made Eve and gave him to Adam for his wife. So God instituted marriage. What God created there in Genesis chapter 2, right to the very end of the chapter, when he said, therefore man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. God ordained, he instituted a marriage in the family there. And at its design from the very beginning, it was one man with one woman for life. God did not institute divorce in Genesis chapter 2, did he? God did not institute polygamy. God did not sanction what we call it, or what is referred to as cohabitation, people living together outside of marriage. God did not, he did not sanction homosexuality. None of those things, none of those practices did God ordain in the beginning. God ordained it as he designed it and desires it to be and still does. In fact, Jesus, when you look at the New Testament and Matthew chapter 19, Jesus reaffirmed and re-instituted what was in the very beginning, what God had established in Genesis 2 for the New Testament. So God established what is his will. All these other things that exist as far as lifestyles or family arrangements or sexual behaviors, and those things, God are against what God designed in the beginning. And then, of course, the law of Moses codified that. I mean, God had very specific laws. We just read one of them in Deuteronomy 23:17 about that. But God forbade those other practices. He allowed them to practice divorce. He did not approve of that. In fact, he said in Malachi chapter 2 that he hated it and would not accept their sacrifices when they practiced it, but because of the hardness of their hearts, he allowed that. It was legal. Divorce and remarriage was under the law of Moses, but those other practices were not legal, and God did not approve of those other things. Now, there were times he tolerated polygamous relationships, but God didn't ordain that, and he did not. That was not what was God's desired will for the people to follow, and it's not acceptable today either. But anyway, we're seeing what God thinks from the very beginning, revealed in all of that. Does God change? Or does Malachi 3 verse 6 say, I am the Lord, I change not? Or we can read in Hebrews 13, Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. Does the Lord change? Does his nature change? And even though he changed his covenant from the old to the new, as far as what God had determined from the beginning, what was right and wrong in terms of morality and all these other things, has that changed? It hasn't. Now, the punishments for those things, yes, that's changed. Back in the Old Testament law, I mean, those things were the sentence for punishment for most of those forms of immorality was death. Now, that's not the New Testament punishment for it, but when God made that the punishment under the law of Moses, what does that signal? What does that teach us? Anything? When God would make that sentence for those sins? It's revealing to us, teaches us, how abominable it is in the sight of God. So even if he doesn't command that punishment under the New Testament, God's going to judge everybody, and we know what the eternal judgment is going to be according to what God says. Now, if we recognize, if we believe what God's Word teaches on those matters, and if we speak these things in the current climate that we're in our society, then what happens as a result of that? Mocked and ridiculed, and beyond just that, will be opposed, and I mean, it'd be quite easy for it's quite easy to lose your jobs today, just if you speak out and say things in a certain way, and you don't. I mean, it doesn't have to be done in. We shouldn't do it in a hateful way. And we also should not be identified with just speaking out against one form of immorality, like homosexuality. I mean, God teaches against all forms of fornication and immorality, idolatry, and all of those things, and every sin. I mean, we need to be equal opportunity opposers of all sin, not just one kind. I mean, so, but when we identify what God teaches in His Word is sinful, what transgresses His law, we need to try to live according to what He teaches and not commit sin, and we need to teach people to not do that, and teach it in the right way. But speaking out about those kinds of things today, I mean, that can definitely, that will get us persecuted in a hurry in a number of different ways. Well, what would have likely happened in this time until Asa comes along as king? Probably would have done the same thing. Everybody was doing it, weren't they? That's what it became rampant. But that didn't make it okay, did it? That didn't make it okay with God. That didn't make it all right either. Even though the nation and embraced these forms of immorality, were they enlightened? Were these people enlightened? Was this progress? This was not progress. This was not enlightened. This was wicked. This is sinful. The devil will, and this we need to recognize, see, this isn't new what's going on today. And people who follow these things or going along with these things now, they will claim, you know, attach these labels. This is progress. This is enlightened. And anybody who doesn't see this, they're all backwards and narrow-minded and all those other labels they put for it. This is nothing new. There's no new thing under the sun, is there? And look, it was going on back then many times. And it was just as wrong then as it is now, and vice versa. Brother Jan?
I was just going to comment that it's gotten to the point where, you know, we now have political candidates that there's one particular candidate that is in a homosexual relationship that's made the statement that his so-called marriage is more traditional than the president's marriage, you know, which is as a result of divorce. So technically that's true, because you can go back to Sodom and Gomorrah and see how that's pretty traditional. it's pretty sad to see what things are coming to when people are so bold to make that kind of wicked statement.
Very much so. And just because something is a tradition doesn't mean that it's a good tradition. There's only one good tradition, and that's whatever God's traditions are. And we just talked about that. And there was no divorce in Genesis. That's not what God came up with, divorce and remarriage. We know Jesus taught the same thing, that he affirmed what God established in the beginning. Jesus quoted from it when he taught his law. And so the exceptions that were tolerated under the law of Moses because of the hardness of the hearts of the people, that is not part of the law of Christ. And so what was in the very beginning, the original tradition from God, is the tradition that is part of the law of Christ that has to be followed today. But yes, you can certainly, as far as the world is concerned, Brother Jan is right. I mean, there. It's a very old tradition, following these forms of immorality. I mean, sin is an old tradition, but it's not a good one. And so all of those things are wrong. But now today, the only people that are wrong are ones that will call something wrong, as far as what the world is doing. So we would be identified as the ones that there's something very, very wrong with us in our thinking. And I mean, if this continues to go in the direction that it's been going, I mean, it's heading in the direction of many that would feel like we should not be allowed to participate in society with the beliefs that we hold. Now it's we need to pray fervently to the Lord that He doesn't allow that to happen. I mean, the freedoms we've had in this country, or that we've known in this country, that the fact that they're part of our Constitution that governs our land, does that mean necessarily that those freedoms are going to persist for us or our children and grandchildren and so forth if the Lord keeps us all here? And no. And I know we have many prayers and here's about that in here publicly about that, and that's a good thing. We need to pray that the Lord continues to, what we're commanded to in 1 Timothy chapter 2. We need to pray that we can live these quiet, peaceable lives in all godliness and honesty. That would be God's will, that we can live our lives following the law of Christ, be the light of the world and the salt of the earth, and not be destroyed and hunted and put out of the society because we believe what the Lord teaches. There are many that would go along with that, but it should not change what we believe and what we practice as followers of Christ. We have to recognize what the truth is. But here we have another opportunity to see how these things can go. It was something that became rampant in Judah in a very short time. I mean, we're not many years removed from King David. I mean, it's we're only about a half a century after David's death. We go from David, a man after God's own heart and the righteousness under him, to Israel being full of immorality and idolatry and homosexuality within that short period of time. I mean, that's when you think about just how quick that was, it's astounding. But that's what happened. So it happened then. We see our world today. From that standpoint, should it really be a shock? Well, not when we read about what could happen then. It's still, I'm shocked, having just in my lifetime seen what, or just even in recent years, seen what I have and what's going on. I would not have expected that, but that's what's happened. But it doesn't change the truth, does it? Doesn't change a thing of what God says. We can't let the world dictate to us what is right and wrong. We don't learn what is right and wrong because of the world. That's who's the prince of this world. So who are we going to let teach us right and wrong? Satan or God? I mean, that's what it comes down to. And I mean, who's behind all this? It's Satan that's deceiving the world, and he did it then. But so this was a very low point in Israel. Asa comes along. Let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 15, and let's get started in reading about Asa and what he does when he gets becomes king. Verses 8 through 11 here in 1 Kings chapter 15, but Samuel. Verse 11. Oh, yes. So, actually, I meant to through 14.
He took away the sodomites out of the land, removed all the idols of his father's domain, and also Maacah, his mother, even her, he removed from being clean because she had made an idol in the grove. And Asa destroyed her idol by the brook Kidron. But the high places were not removed. Nevertheless, Asa's heart was perfect in the Lord all his days.
Well, look at that. So in spite of who his parents were, I mean, we know about his father. I mean, just look back at verse 3 about his father, Abijam, who walked in all the sins of his father, Rehoboam, which he had done before him, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God as the heart of David his father. So there's a statement about Asa's father in verse 3. Look at his mother. What was she doing? Worshiping idols. So look at his parents and his grandparents. I mean, Rehoboam And Rehoboam's idol worshiping parents, idol worshiping grandparents, which would be both sides. And yet here comes a man, in spite of all that, he seeks the Lord. He did that which is right in the sight of the Lord, as David his father did. And as such, and now becomes king, what does he do? What does he do about all that? What were we just reading in chapter 14, 21 through 24? What happened under Rehoboam in his time, which obviously persisted through Abijam's reign? What does Asa do? Those very specific things that he mentioned in chapter 14, now, here in chapter 15, he says Asa does away with that. So he took away the Sodomites out of the land. So he got, no longer was this permitted to be practiced in Israel. The idols, that was removed. Those were gotten rid of. His own mother, in verse 13. Now, how many people would stand up against their own mother? Well, what a terrible thing to have to be in that position to choose. And then this is one of those cases, the only way in which Asa could serve the Lord and do the Lord's will, in this case, was to oppose his mother, because his mother was worshiping an idol. He's king. He can't tolerate idol worship in the land. What about if it's his own mother? Would there be any temptation to wink at that and just, well, okay, Mom, just do that in private? But that's not what he did. He put his own mother out from being queen. I mean, here's somebody, obviously, that has his heart right with the Lord. So even when it comes down to God or Mom, he chose the Lord when that was the choice. Now, we know that we're going to be put into positions, like we're all going to be tested, whether it's our mother or our father, whether it's our siblings, our spouses, or our children. We're going to be put into situations in our lives where we have to make choices. What is right here? What is right according to the Lord and what the Lord commands? And or are we going to do that, or are we going to try to make things smooth in our family? We're all going to be tested on that, because who's our master? That's the question. Who's our master going to be? And there can only be one, and it's got to be Christ. So we have to make that choice. Christ has to be our master. Now, there are ways in which there's a right way. There are right ways and wrong ways to go about that. Now, Asa had no choice. I mean, we're not given all the details. Was there likely a conversation that he had with his mother? We can expect that was probably the case. But clearly, she was persisting in this practice, and she wasn't going to change. And so it came down to the choice. Was he going to allow idolatry in the land when it was his own mother, or was he going to put her out? And he had to do it. But when that was the choice, he did it. There aren't very many people we read about that are going to take their service to the Lord to that extent, to that direction. But that's right. That was the right thing to do. We need to remember this example of Asa. Even though we're out of time now, we want to pick up from there next week. Look a little bit more about that as some scriptures to read between now and then that will help out in this. Little homework assignment. Matthew chapter 10, verses 32 through 39. Matthew 10, 32 to 39 for next week. And also Luke chapter 14, 26 through 33. Or we might as well just make it through 35. Luke 14, 26 through 35. Look at those two passages that teach us about what the price will be for following the Lord. What is the cost of being his disciple? And are we willing to count that cost? So that'll be very good to take the opportunity, looking at the example of Asa, to consider those teachings and how they apply to us as followers of Christ. We'll stop there for this morning and look forward to continuing, Lord willing, next.